Yes, I remember, to acid hydrocyanic acid. This is, indeed, highly toxic to humans. Depending on the amount of hydrocyanic acid consumed, severe cramps, vomiting, shortness of breath, and then unconsciousness and death set in, namely as a result of respiratory paralysis. First aid can, in fact, only be rendered via fresh air resuscitation, and to be sure, only by a device, that is by a suitable apparatus. Under no circumstances may mouth-to-mouth resuscitation be performed because through this, the helping person poisons himself through the rescue breathing and can even die, just because he, through the mouth-to-mouth breathing, inhales the poisonous breath of the poisoned person. Quetzal, 15. That is correct. 16. A poisoning by hydrocyanic acid or its salts, particularly potassium cyanide, through the gastrointestinal tract, through the lungs or the skin, causes a blockage of the inner cell respiration. 17. With the iron atom of the respiratory enzymes, an iron cyanide complex is formed, which impairs the oxygen combining capacity and the oxygen intake into the cells so severely that these functions fail and expire completely. Billy, you are, among other things, also a doctor and must know this exactly. Quetzal, 18. That is correct. Billy, I am still in outer space with my questions, and this time, with the asteroid Eros, which I was allowed to view during the Great Journey and which looks similar to a potato, with thousands of large boulders that are scattered about and that are covered in many places by blue dust or other blue material, whereby also many craters cover the surface of the space projectile. The largest crater, as Tua said, is about 7,500 meters wide, if I remember correctly. In addition, now the question that one asked me, over and over again, it is to be read that this asteroid could collide with the Earth one day, which would mean a global catastrophe and the end of all life on Earth, since Eros still has a size of about 35 kilometers. What should be thought of this, also with regard to other asteroids that also often come into the vicinity of the Earth? Is the anxiety justified concerning such a catastrophe? Quetzal, 19. In relation to the asteroid Eros, not in any way, unless upheavals in the Sol system would occur, through which a change could be brought about, as this would also be possible through influences that are foreign to the Sol system, such as by large comets or wandering planets, like the Destroyer, by which the asteroid could be thrown from its orbit and be directed towards the Earth, but this is extremely unlikely. 20. The possibility that Eros could fall to the Earth in the foreseeable future is less than 3%. 21. But on the other hand, there is a continuously ongoing possibility that impacts can occur on the Earth by other asteroids, but these do not exhibit as enormous proportions as Eros, yet they could still cause enormous catastrophes. 22. However, these asteroids are small in size, namely from a few meters to a few kilometers. 23. During the period leading up to the turn of the millennium, a number of such objects will arrive in the near vicinity of Earth, but without endangering the Earth directly, even if, at the same time, the distance mark of such an asteroid falls below the 200,000 km mark from the Earth, and thus, the object passes closer to the Earth than the Moon. 24. Also, at the end of the first and at the beginning of the second year of the new millennium, an asteroid the size of a few hundred meters, which will still be unknown to the earthly scientists until then, will cross Earth's orbit at a distance of a little more than 500,000 kilometers away, as this will also be the case several times with a small number of other asteroids until then. 25. With a few exceptions, all of these objects will be discovered by the terrestrial scientists and amateur astronomers, when the time comes closer to the Earth. 26. This also applies in relation to comets, which are newly discovered and which sometimes exhibit orbital periods that are thousands of years long, for they travel far beyond the Oort cloud in their orbits. Billy, well, then to purely earthly problems, if I may say so. Actually, it is a problem, that the earthly fortune tellers, astrologers, and clairvoyants, etc. drive the people into anxiety and terror with their allegedly precise predictions. One of you once said that a clearly and rationally thinking person, if he considers, analyzes and, therefore, evaluates all facts precisely, arrives at a prediction rate of about 14% reliability, that is accuracy, while the percentages for the clairvoyants, fortune tellers, and astrologers and similar stored nonsense bringers are only at an accuracy rate of a maximum of 3-4%. Quetzal, 27. That, too, is correct. 28. People who use their normal and healthy intellect to make a prediction of the future, on the basis of existing situations and events, facts, etc. and, thus, on the basis of past and present situations of any kind, usually arrive at an average correctness value of about 14%. 29. This, in contrast to all the flimsy, misleading, fanciful, senseless, and unrealistic projections and statements of clairvoyants, astrologers, and fortune tellers, etc., whose success rates lie at a maximum of 3-4%. Billy, then at least 3-4% accuracy. Quetzal, 30. Unfortunately, no, for this isn't something that is based on a recognition of the future but solely on a stroke of fate, which is erroneously called chance by the Earth people, although there is no such thing in that sense, because chance is only given when, for example, something falls to a person, such as portion of a profit or, otherwise, a share of something. 31. Only in this way can the term chance have its correctness, but not with respect to when something unexpected arises, which one wasn't counting on and, therefore, which arises from the joining together of the given and complementary and interlocking relationships, and thus becomes a stroke of fate. Billy, you explained that well. In truth, things, situations, and events, as well as occurrences, etc., simply fit themselves together and join into one another in such a way that a particular effect emerges from this, freely according to the law of causality, that is, the law of cause and effect. This will result in certain effects that, in turn, arise from specific causes, as I just explained. So strokes of fate are nothing other than occurrences, events, incidents, and situations, etc. that result from a certain joining together, in order to act as specific causes. So for example, if it happens that two people meet unexpectedly somewhere in a foreign country, then it cannot and should not be designated as chance but rather solely as a stroke of fate, for the causes of this are given that both people traveled to the same country and are staying at the same place, where they will then meet. So the one joins itself to the other and the one to another, from which then emerges the result, that is the effect, even the stroke of fate. Quetzal, 32. Another time, I must say that this, too, is correct. Billy, nice. Good then. Here, I have another question from an 11-year-old boy, who occupies himself with ornithology and, thus, with the study of birds. He asked me about how the birds know what they can eat. With this, he means, what is edible for them and what is inedible, that is toxic, for them or how the birds know, in particular, what berries to eat, whether the fruits would be ripe and good for them. Quetzal, 33. That is no secret. 34. Mature fruits and berries store and reflect solar radiation, and when these are ripe, they emit light in the ultraviolet range, even when the sun isn't shining. 35. This shortwave light is perceived by the birds, as well as by certain animals and insects, and it is the signal that the fruits or berries are ripe for digestion. 36. This equally applies to the edibility of fruits and berries, grasses and leaves, etc., which emit a certain radiation that is perceived by the organisms and that informs them that the food which is important for them is non-toxic. Billy, thank you for the explanation. The boy will be happy about it. With some Jace, I once observed an optical phenomenon in the Arctic, namely three suns, which came about by the fact that the real sun was reflected twice in the atmosphere, once to the left and once to the right of its actual location. What I want to ask is this, does this phenomenon appear every year? Quetzal, 37. That is correct, yes. Billy, as a doctor and physician, etc., you can surely explain to me how fatigue arises, right? Quetzal, 38. I can do that. Dash 39. In the nerve cells, the resting substance, adenosine, is formed, through which listlessness and fatigue arise. Billy, and, can this actually be counteracted with coffee and tea? Quetzal, 40. The waking amin, caffeine, of coffee and the theine of tea can actually counteract the adenosine. 41. If substances such as caffeine or theine, etc. are fed to the body while it is lethargic, tired, and in need of recuperation, then these will produce a counter-effect with respect to the adenosine, namely by suppressing or neutralizing this, whereby the maximum effect of the caffeine and theine or other similar waking amines will be achieved, but only about 1 1/2 hours after their consumption. 42. But soon, the effect of the waking amines will diminish again, which means for the body in need of recuperation and for its nerve cells which produce the adenosine that now, the resting substance must be increasingly produced, by what means listlessness and fatigue become apparent in an intensified form. Billy, lately, the question arises again and again as to what circumstances cause the so-called infant death, whereby there are many speculations about this. Can you tell me a few things about this? Quetzal, 43. Because there are several reasons for this, it wouldn't make sense to mention them all. 44. However, it should be said that there is an erroneous view of the so-called infant death, which is also known as sudden infant death syndrome among the Earth people. 45. This erroneous view consists of the notion that small children, primarily infants, are supposed to be placed on their bellies in order to be put to sleep or after a meal. 46. This crazy view is based on the wrong acceptance that there is a lower risk of choking if the child would suddenly vomit or simply cough up what has been eaten. 47. But when infants are placed on their bellies, they are exposed to the risk that the heart and lungs, as well as the other vital organs, will become impaired in their functions as a result of the pressure on the belly, which can lead to sudden death and also to the fact that the exhaled carbon dioxide is inhaled again, due to the infant lying on the belly, which can lead to a quick and deadly result. 48. Another important point to be mentioned in relation to sudden infant death syndrome is found with the parents or parental guardians. 49. And, unfortunately, precisely this fact to be mentioned is unknown to the doctors and medical professionals and to the courts and supervisory bodies on Earth, which is extremely regrettable. 50. The reason why there are so many sudden infant deaths to be mentioned in all countries of the world, although mainly in the so-called civilized countries or industrial nations, is because sudden infant death syndrome is induced consciously and also unconsciously by a parent, or even by both parents, but also by parental substitutes, namely when these lose nervous control over themselves and uncontrollably maltreat the infants, shaking and abusing them to such an extent that deadly injuries to the brain arise, by what means sudden death occurs within minutes, hours, or a few days. 51. Unfortunately, this fact will run rampant more and more, for the people, mainly those of the industrialized countries, become increasingly indifferent, addicted to pleasure, unsteady, unkind, and disliking among themselves and toward each other. 52. But at the same time, they also strain their nerves as a result of this, which lets them get out of control very quickly, in order to commit thoughtless and uncontrolled actions as a further consequence, accompanied by fierce anger that can have deadly results, just like when young children are abused in the aforementioned manner, whereby sudden infant death is then the result. 53. But unfortunately, research in this direction has not yet been performed by the Earth person, which is why no relevant findings will be made for quite some time. So also not with regard to other forms of maltreatment of small children by adults, by whom sudden infant death syndrome is induced. Billy, that is horrible. How long will it take, then, until it has come so far that this form of sudden infant death syndrome is recognized and the respective uncaring parents are called to account? Quetzal, 54. Unfortunately, on Earth, that is with the Earth people, true justice is still written in very small letters, for there is still too much negligence, and thus, serious and very severe crimes are punished more mildly and more gently than small offenses. 55. It often seems that the courts would have great respect for serious and very severe crimes and, therefore, would pass more lenient sentences for these than what seems to be the case with smaller crimes, for which no respect is given and which, thus, are condemned harshly. 56. But to answer your question, I must say that it will still take a long time before the aforementioned criminal form of sudden infant death syndrome is recognized and punished. 57. Before the start of the third millennium, this won't be the case. 58. So, in any case, it must be accepted. Billy, so nothing else remains but to wait. Quetzal, 59. There is no other possibility. Billy, so just stick to it. Then another question. Did Luke ever make a portrait of Jmanuel? To my knowledge, such is attributed to him. Quetzal, 60. That does not correspond to the truth. 61. Luke in no way mastered the art of drawing, so he was also in no position to produce a portrait of Jmanuel. 62. Such a portrait of Jmanuel, which is attributed to him, comes from an artist of Italian origin, who never saw Jmanuel and who also had no description with respect to Jmanuel's appearance. 63. His name was Alfonso Stranieri. Billy, then I have a question in reference to Queen Nofretete, who was the wife of Pharaoh Amenhotep IV, who was also known as Akhenaten and who, to my knowledge, reigned in the 14th century BC, from 1364 to 1347. Where was Nofretete actually buried? Her real name, so I think, was Nefertiti, right? Quetzal, 64. That is correct. 65. Nevertheless, a tomb of Nefertiti does not exist but rather only one of her double, who was the concubine of Amenhotep IV/Akhenaten, but this was kept secret and, thus, also wasn't handed down in any records. 66. The name of Nefertiti's double was Chepris, which meant the powerful one, while Nefertiti's name meant the beautiful one has come. 67. Nefertiti and Chepris were neither twin sisters nor in any way connected to each other in kinship, yet they were hardly able to be distinguished by those who were initiated. 68. Thus, both of them alternately appeared before the people, who remained unaware of the fact that these were two different women who, moreover, hated one another until death. 69. In consequence of this, then, it came to the murder of Chepris, who was killed by Nefertiti with snake venom. 70. Both were boundlessly jealous of each other, even though Amenhotep IV, that is Akhenaten, treated both of them equally. 71. After the murder, Nefertiti naturally feared the revenge and punishment of Akhenaten, so she disguised herself and fled from the palace undetected, in order to board a ship with accomplices, which should have taken them to foreign lands. 72. After several hours on the Mediterranean Sea, however, they were surprised by a heavy storm, by which the small ship was shattered and sank, together with Nefertiti and the whole crew, into the wild waters. 73. That was the actual end of Nefertiti. 74. After the murder of Chepris, Akhenaten let her be secretly buried and took as his wife her twin sister, who resembled her to the hair, and this was the one who henceforth lived at the side of Amenhotep IV as Nefertiti and as an Egyptian queen and who entered into history. Billy, and the model bust made of painted limestone, which was found in Amarna during excavations, now represents the real Nefertiti. Quetzal, 75. In addition to the bust mentioned by you, several unfinished ones still exist. 76. but all of them do not represent Nefertiti but represent Shepra's identical twin sister, Neph, as her name was. Billy, pretty obscure, this history. But it fits well with that time period. And since we're in Egypt, how is it that so many archaeologists and grave robbers met sudden deaths while excavating or robbing the ancient pharaoh's tombs or else died within hours, days, or a few weeks? Quetzal, 77. There are several reasons for that, but the two most important ones are the following, 78. To protect the tombs against grave robbery, one method was that spines, which were thinner than hair and which were of the fruit of the Indian cactus, were soaked with deadly poisons, were dried, and were then painted onto bandages, with which the dead were wrapped. 79. The deadly poisons of the kind that was used are extremely stable and are still effective even after thousands of years. 80. Now, if grave robbers and archaeologists, etc. touched the bandages of the mummified bodies, then the poisonous spines penetrated into their hands, without this being noticed, because the spines of the cactus figs are much thinner than human hair. 81. In addition, the insidious poison was of a different kind, so it was also different in the temporal effect, which could occur in either hours or days or only after 2 or 3 weeks. 82. Another very popular and lethal means was the use of fungal spores that were cultivated specifically for the purpose of the quick killing of the grave robbers, so the bandages of the deceased as well as the sarcophagi and the tomb walls, etc. were infected with these. 83. Now, when grave robbers, or later archaeologists, entered the tombs, as a result of their entering and also by the work taken up, they whirled up dust that was loaded with deadly fungal spores. 84. The extremely toxic dust was inhaled by the grave robbers and archaeologists, and this quickly led to death, which came about very quickly or over days or over several weeks. 85. These are the two main ways by which the tombs and the treasures of the pharaohs were protected against grave robbers. Billy, interesting. What do you think about meddling in other people's cultures, that is in their interests, etc.? By this, I mean not only interfering in foreign cultures of foreign planets and civilizations, but specifically what is common on Earth, especially in connection with the religions, and I think especially of Christianity, which has sent its henchmen, representatives, priests, and missionaries to foreign nations since ages ago, to natives and to other faiths, in order to convert these to the Christian faith and to the civilization of the white man, either peacefully or very often by forceful proselytizing, by what means there have always been many deaths over and over again, when the foreign nations, natives, and those of other faiths did not follow the sense of the missionaries, etc. Through the criminal activities and actions of these men of God, there were destroyed, and there are still destroyed, the old traditions and customs as well as the old beliefs of the natives by the missionaries, who harassed them and who took from them their very own freedom and way of life. Quetzal 86. Those are not only senseless machinations but even criminal and felonious ones that should never appear. 87. With us, such interventions and interferences are strictly illegal in every form and, thus, are prohibited by appropriate directives. 88. This equally applies to interventions and interferences in the private matters of each person, so also with respect to all matters of families, friends, acquaintances, and communities, etc. Billy, I find that to be good and humane, but unfortunately, one cannot say this in reference to the actions of the religions and their missionaries. Criminal and felonious are actually the right labels for their irresponsible actions. But now, tell me what social status Simon Peter had, I mean the disciple of Jmanuel? Quetzal, 89. He was of the status of the haves and, thus, was very rich. 90. It was he who constantly donated from his own wealth, for the implementation of the mission and for the spreading of Jmanuel's teaching. 91. If this wouldn't have been so, then everyone would have had to live a more frugal life than what was, in fact, the case. 92. While there were other wealthy ones among the disciples, who also contributed their part to everything, it was Simon Peter, however, who was the main donor. Billy, and Matthew, the tax collector. Quetzal, 93. He was also quite wealthy. Billy, then another area, it is well known to me that salt is very important for humans, as it also naturally is for animals and plants. But now, what interests me is when, in fact, the first large salt deposits formed on the earth and, furthermore, how the balance of salt affects the person. You should, at least, be able to answer the last question, as a physician. Quetzal, 94. That is correct. 95. And since I also deal with geology, I can also answer the first question for you. 96. The first large salt deposits on Earth formed around 340 million years ago, but the main ones first formed 240 to 270 million years ago. 97. In relation to life forms, salt is very important. 98. Speak of humans alone, then the following is to be explained. 99. Salt is an extremely important component of the blood. 100. Normally, between 45 and 50 grams of sodium chloride flow through the veins of the person in a solution as saline ions. 101. This concentration of salt must remain constant. 102. If there is too little of it in the blood, then there arises an excess pressure in the red blood cells, making them burst. 103. But this, then, has the consequence that no more stimuli can be transmitted to the heart muscle, consequently, the heart ceases to function and, thus, stops beating, respectively stops pumping blood through the veins. 104. However, salt not only flows through the veins but through the whole body. 105. Without salt, the human body would be immobilized because no cell could function. 106. Every single somatic cell is surrounded by salt water and swims about freely therein. 107. If the salt of this liquid dwindles, then the pressure ratio alters itself in the cell so dramatically that the cell membrane disappears and the cell receives no more nutrients. 108. Only when the salinity, that is the concentration of salt, remains constant in the body can the heart, muscles, and nervous system of the person function smoothly. 109. Each day, the human body loses salt, through the urine, through tears and sweat, which is why it is vital to supply the body with salt again, along with the necessary amount of liquid, but this differs depending on the person and his physical constitution, so no uniform or general measure can be mentioned. 110. Thus, one person needs several liters of fluid per day, while another, during the same period, gets by with very little, perhaps only 1, 2, or 3 deciliters. 111. In addition to the properties of the body and all its organs and to the loss of fluid, climate conditions and physical strain and motion naturally also play an important role, as well as the drinking discipline and the mental and volitional attitude of the person. 112. Excessive drinking is unhealthy because too much salt is removed, so new salt must be supplied to the body, which means that more liquid, that is health-wise, which can cause damages through overhydration. Billy, for my part, I drink very little, sometimes no more than 2 deciliters per day. Quetzal, 113. That is known to me. 114. However, you won't suffer any harm from that because you're one of those people who only need very little liquid. 115. When it becomes necessary, you automatically drink some more because you then perceive a thirst feeling. 116. This also applies to certain substances that your body needs, like even salt, sugar, vinegar, lemon juice, or orange juice, etc. Billy, yes, that is actually so. As a rule, I eat what I feel an urge to eat. Quetzal, 117. So I said. 118. And you do well with that, since you simply don't let yourself be tempted by uncontrollable cravings. Billy, you're right, I don't,